So my wife's not in here. She's doing junior church. She was last week too. And so I went long last week. And if you're working with a bunch of kids in junior church, nothing's more appreciated than when the pastor goes long. So I will try and pay back my wife this week by not going long today. And for all the Sunday school teachers who lost half of the Sunday school hour last time. So Acts chapter 11. Last time I took basically almost two chapters of scripture. Today let's do four verses. So I know it seems like I'm overcompensating, but we'll just do Acts 11, 27. We'll start verse 27. Go down to verse 30. As a quick review, we're going through this series, Making a Difference, Turning the World Upside Down, and we're doing it through various topics. We'll end up having nine of them as we get all the way through it, but Acts 17, verse 6 says, these men who have turned the world upside down, and the question that stems from that is, how did they do this? How did these men, without social media, without cars, without telephones, without mass communication, without any of this stuff, how did they turn the world upside down? And we've begun working through this list, and we've reached pretty far. We started with healthy relationships. They were caring people, a spirit-filled people. They had faithfulness. They used teamwork. They used evangelism. So we've covered six of them already. Today, on week number seven, we're talking about turning the world upside down through giving. Acts chapter 11, verse 27. We'll read down through the end of the chapter there in verse 30. And in these days, prophets came from Jerusalem to Antioch. Then one of them, named Agabus, stood up and showed by the Spirit that there was going to be a great famine throughout all the world, which also happened in the days of Claudius Caesar. Then the disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. This they also did and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. All right, so we run into this just really short but brief example of the early church giving, and we'll go to some other texts here in a minute in this idea of giving, but the early church is going to run into a situation. This situation is going to be a little larger because of the famine, but the situation was a kind of reoccurring issue. Remember, we talked at the very beginning, back when we talked about the idea of teamwork. We talked about some of the needs that faced the early church, and one of the issues they had was who was going to feed the widows and how the widows are going to be fed, and that's where we come into this role of deacons. But now, let's imagine for ourselves this morning that we are the early church. Okay, so instead of being Mount Hope Bible Church in 2020, you're the early church. You're there just a couple of years after, you know, Christ's death on the cross. Being a Christian is not a popular thing. It's not an accepted thing. You are not living in a Christian nation. You're not living in a nation where anybody would be accepting of Christianity. And so what happens is when you get saved, when you accept Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, you are now ostracized from your family. You are no longer allowed to be a family. Now, this is important because they live in a patriarchal society, right? So families stay together in very close units. So all of the family stuff was all in the same place, and now the family kicks you out. Well, here's the other thing. All of the businesses were basically word of mouth. They were reputation. Well, I'm not doing business with this guy. He's a Christian. So all of a sudden, you went from having a family and having a job and having income to having none of the above. Well, how do you solve that? Well, the early church got together, and they said, listen, we're gonna work together to solve this problem. And one of the ways they did this was that they gave to the needs that each other had. And that really gives us the situation that we find here in Acts chapter 11. And so the first thing that we see is really simply the need. Okay, so we're introduced to a group of people in verse 27. It was the prophets who came from Jerusalem. So these were people who came up from Jerusalem to Antioch. Now understand, we're in the early church. They can't open their Bible. So if you went to a service in the early church in Antioch, whoever was speaking that morning wouldn't be like, hey, turn to Acts chapter 11. There was no Acts chapter 11. It wasn't like, hey, listen, we're going to do a study of justification today, so turn to the book of Romans. Or because we're going to review the life of Jesus, let's all read Matthew together, right? They don't have any of those things to pick up and to read, right? So the way God worked through the early church was he gave people special spiritual gifts in the early church to be able to minister truth to the early church. These are often apostles, pastors, in this case, they're prophets. These people showed up in the early church, and they clearly, as it tells us in verse 28, and it says, he stood up and showed by the Spirit, right? So this is a guy who's demonstrating truth, given to him by God. He speaks it to his audience. He says, listen, I'm here to communicate a message. Poverty, as I already said, was no stranger to the early church. Even in Jesus' life, remember when Jesus introduces himself in Matthew 8, he says, I have no place to lay my head. It doesn't mean that Jesus never slept in a bed. That's not what it means. It doesn't mean, hey, that for all of Jesus' life, man, he always just had to lay out on the ground. We know he grew up at Mary and Joseph's home, right? He did live in a house, but he never owned one as he got older. He didn't have those possessions. Why? Because he didn't have the resources. He was out busy about his father's work. He wasn't amassing a fortune and a wealth and building an empire. He was out ministering. Philippians 4, 11 through 12, Paul's speaking. He says, not that I am speaking of being in need, for I've learned in whatever situation I am in to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. Hebrews 11, 36 through 38. Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned whatever situation I can be content. He says, listen, I understand the same thing. I understand the recognition of where I'm at. If you are wondering how God is going to face some pressing need in your life, remember, you're not the first person in Christianity to have a need. You're not the first person to sit there and go, I don't know how God is going to meet that need. So many times in the life of a church or life of a family, God intentionally wants you to wait for that need to be met so that you know He met that need. He is the one who sovereignly does that. I can remember before the Lord called us to Mount Home Bible Church for almost 3 years, Carrie and I traveled around America with Baptist World Mission, and we were out traveling, and we made $645 a month. That was the most we had in mission support the whole time we were at deputation, right? Now, we had three kids and $645 a month, right? And I can remember every month, I'd be like, I'm not even writing a budget out this month. It doesn't help. Like, I pay the first three things and you're broke, right? But every month the Lord would provide. Sometimes He'd provide by having us go to a meeting, or sometimes somebody would just write us a letter in the mail and say, oh, hey, we were thinking about you this week, and so here's some money. Or sometimes He provided by a job. I remember there was a point where I had 4 weeks of no meeting scheduled, and the pastor of the church there in Jane Lou, West Virginia, he came to me, Pastor Stutler, and he said, hey, you're going to be in town for a couple of weeks. Do you want to remodel the ladies' restroom? He's like, we'll pay you to fix the basement bathroom of the church while you're here. And I'm like, yes, I would be glad to do that, right? And the Lord would provide. And sometimes you had no idea where He was going to provide. Sometimes you'd be at McDonald's and you'd be like, all right, boys, we've got 12 bucks. Choose wisely, right? And then you'd go to pay and the person in front of me would be like, you know what? I'm going to pay for a meal today. Or sometimes we'd go and I'd open up my book bag. I'd travel with a backpack and I'd open it up and someone would stuff like gift cards to McDonald's in it. Don't know who it was, right? But the Lord meets those needs. He does those things, and He's doing those things for the early church. But here's one of the really, really important things about meeting needs in the early church. Who did God use to meet those needs? It was the early church, right? The roles have kind of reversed in my life. We have, obviously, we get paid now, so it's nice to have an income. And those things, but you know one of the great things that I get to do now? I get to meet people's needs, right? One of my favorite things to do is to have missionaries in and try and do something as a blessing for those missionaries, right? As a pastor, super thrilled when we brought up the need about Mark and Becca, and everybody's like, yes, let's take care of that need. Why? Because they're in a situation where they financially don't have the resources, but this is the body of Christ coming in and meeting those needs, all right? So we're introduced to this need. The famine's going to come, it says in verse 28, and so they're going to try and meet this very practical need. How are they going to do that? This is not rocket science. They're going to take an offering. Now, I want to be clear that there's nothing super spiritual about the actual passing of a plate. Okay? There's no bonus points for the kind of offering plate you have or the method in which you're offering. I attended a church for 6 years of my life that they never took an offering. They had a box in the back, and you just put money in the box, and then, like, that was it. They never took an offering. I was at a church in Jacksonville that every time the church met, they took an offering. You came to Awana's, there was an Awana offering, right? You went to teen group, there was a teen offering. You went to the men's breakfast on Saturday, and there was the men's breakfast offering, right? They took an offering every single time people got together, right? There's not necessarily a right or wrong way to do the offering. The point of the offering is just the gathering of the funds to meet needs, okay? So here we are in the text. We have this group of people, and they're going to get together, and they're going to take an offering. And the question is, how does this work? And so we're going to answer really the three simple questions that we always answer when you think about things like that. The who, what, the why, right? Okay, so go with me to verse 29, and it says, "Then the disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea." Okay, so here we are introduced to the three questions, the who, the what, and the why. So first, who? Everyone. We can back ourselves up a couple of weeks into the study. Teamwork. When we all get together, it accomplishes a lot. It makes it easy to carry. Makes all of the things go together. Giving was never meant for a couple of people inside the body of Christ. Now some of you may have more of a spiritual gift in the area of giving, in the area of mercy, in the area of meeting needs. But that doesn't mean you alone are to carry that burden. Right? Like, I don't have the gift of giving. Yeah, I have the gift of selfishness. And so, I'm not passing that out, right? The gift of giving was intended for us as a body, as a team effort. Everyone's supposed to play a role. 1 Corinthians 16:2. "On the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper, so there'll be no collecting when I come." Deuteronomy 16:17. "Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord, your God, that he has given you." So at the very beginning, one of the things that's really important is that the early church got together and said, we're going to meet this need. How are we going to do it? Everyone's going to get together. We're all going to do this, right? We're going to commit as a group to meeting this need. So what did they give? Well, according to his ability. Now, this is really, really important. Because when it comes to the text of Scripture, God has called us to give a portion of what he has given to us. And that is vastly different. The Lord may have blessed you financially. You may be in a point where you are just hoping. I remember when I was traveling and going back to that, not having very much money. And it was like, all right, Lord, I'm going to give. But that $6.40 I just put in the offering plate is not going to go far. Right? Or sometimes you'd be like, no, hold that $6.40 check, because if I put it in this Sunday, it ain't going to make it, right? And so there are points financially where we don't have much to give. Sometimes when we give it, it's small. And the Lord may be in this point in your life, you're like, man, I would love to give more, but man, I'm on a fixed income. I'm on a really, really tight budget. There's not a lot of extra money. Listen, God is not asking you to give more than he has blessed you with. Okay, so when you're watching TV, a little TV preacher comes on. He says, no, listen. I know you don't have $1,000, but you just give it in faith. What he's asking you to do is contrary to what God has just told you to do. Now, here's the problem though, that we run into. And that is, we tell God, well, I'm going to give back to you after I've deducted all of my expenses. Right? Okay, so Lord, thanks, but I've got a lot of hobbies and things I need to afford this month. And after I've done all of those things, then if there's money left over, then I'll write you a check. See, the issue that comes to the text is, according to our ability, is not after I've spent all the money I wanted to spend. According to his ability is after I've spent the things God has told me to spend. Right? Now, I'll be honest. The list that I want to spend and the list God wants me to spend are not usually the same, right? They're not, because I often have a list of wants, things that I like, things that interest me. And a lot of times the Lord's like, yeah, but that's just earthly treasure. It's dust, it's rust, it's whatever. And so here he says, listen, give according to your ability. Mark 12:41-44. "And he sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many people put in large sums. And a poor widow came and put in 2 small copper coins, which would make a penny. And he called his disciples and said to them, 'Truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the offering box. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty has put in everything that she had and all she had to live on.' Now, go in your mind to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Well, what's the point? He says, listen, I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but that as a matter of fairness, your abundance at the present time should supply their need. What is he saying to the church in Corinth? Listen, at this point in history, you're doing really well. Your church is prospering financially, and you've been able to have abundance in life. And so listen, I'm not telling you that you're supposed to shoulder all the burden, but here's the point. Right now, at this point in your life, you are financially prosperous, so you should help meet the needs of those who aren't. When we talk about giving according to his ability, some people are just natural fundraisers. You know, they just walk around, and every time they ask for money, it just comes in. Some people are not natural fundraisers. But when it comes to the church, it's not fundraising. The goal isn't for me to stand up here and to paint a picture and to, you know, do this and like, hey, let's get together and, you know, raise some funds. The goal is to meet needs. The goal is to be a spiritual blessing. I remember in college, I was doing a Bible study, and we were at Michigan Tech University, and we were doing a Bible study after a volleyball game, and one of the guys was in school. If you don't know Michigan Tech, it's a big engineering school, lots of really smart people there, and the one guy said, he goes, yeah, he's like, when I get out of college, he's like, I'm going to have a really, really good job, and when I have a really good job, he's like, I'm going to start giving to God. And he said, you know, I mean, there's some things I got to pay off first, some student loans, house, car, that kind of stuff. But when I get that stuff taken care of, you can be assured, next thing I'm going to give is God, right? The problem with that is there's always some other expense. There's always some other thing that comes up in our life. And if we tell the God, hey, listen, in a humorous way, Lord, when I win the lottery, you're going to have half of it, right? What we're saying to God is the things you've given me now, all of the stuff in my life, all of the blessings, that's not enough for me to give back to you. If you want me to give back to you, God, you've got to give me more. Okay? So in essence, that's a heart of unthankfulness to God. It's saying to God, God, I would give to you. I would follow your commands. You just haven't been good enough to me. You haven't met my needs enough so that I can give back to you. Now listen, sometimes when we give back, it's small. It's in proportion to what we have, right? Sometimes the Lord is asking us to give back big. Sometimes the Lord blesses us and he's telling you, listen, I'm blessing you, but I don't want you to hold on to that blessing. I want that to go through you to somebody else. There are times in life where God says, listen, hold the things of this world with loose hands. Okay, now we've talked about really the who and the what, but the why is also important to this discussion. And that is the relief to the brothers. Okay, it says, verse 29, then the disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren. Now, this is important, by the way. And even as a church, we have to be careful that our goal isn't to have a big bank account, a nice balanced spreadsheet, right? To have a bunch of resources that when we get together to have our annual meeting in October, we can all high-five each other and go, wow, we got a lot of money in the bank. Do great. No, the point of the money coming in wasn't so that the church could have a reserve fund or that they could have a slush fund or a fellowship fund. The point of the money coming in was to meet needs. It was to intentionally minister to people. One of the great things that I love about pastoring this church is that almost every year we are trying to find ways to meet needs. Whether that's missionaries, whether that's ministering to people in the church, we love to meet needs. I love ministering to the call or to the care center guys or to the Into the Light or even, it used to be Crisis Pregnancy Resource Center, now it's something else. But like when we've gone and we've done some of those Project 1014s and we've done those things and we've ministered to those people or we've had missionaries in where we're able to help them or encourage them or send the Gearhearts to a class for China or to the Perrys as they're over there or to even when the Johnsons that we had today when they were in Brazil before and they had tire issues and we're able to buy new tires for their car and the things that have happened. Pastor Wayne and Lori, we're able to help buy a new car for them and do all of those ministry things. Why are those things important? Because the money that God blesses Mount Home Bible Church is not so we can sit on it. It's supposed to do something for the cause of Christ. It's supposed to reach out and make a difference in our community. Right? Okay, so we see the need. We see the offering. And then in chapter 11, verse 30, we see the pattern. Once again, I'm not giving you anything new this morning. This isn't rocket science. It says in verse 30, they also did and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. We refer to him mostly in Acts as Paul. This was not the first, nor was it the last offering like this. The early church does this in Acts 2 through 4. We see benevolence offerings in Philippians 1, Philippians 2. We see it in Corinth. We see it throughout the life of the early church. Right? Okay, so one of the ministries that Paul did, he was like the facilitator. He would show up, he would collect funds, and he would keep traveling, collecting funds, and he would go to a church that had needs, and he would go and be a blessing to them. He'd be a spiritual encouragement to them. If you follow the church in Antofagasta, which is where Mark and Becca Perry are, right? They need a building. They went and looked at a building, and David Flink is the other missionary that is working with them, David and Christy Flink. And David Flink posted on Facebook, he said, we saw a building, it's a beautiful building, it'll fit our needs, but we're $30,000 short of being able to buy the building. So he posted on Facebook. 2 days later, he posted on Facebook, churches in the States have given enough money that we're in the process of purchasing the church, right? Like, so now there's going to be a building in Antofagasta, Chile. The churches in America said, listen, we need a church over there so that the people in Antofagasta, Chile can hear the gospel, right? And there's a group of people in Antofagasta, Chile who you will never meet unless you go over there. And you're more than welcome to. Mark said, come on over. But if you never go there, you will never meet them. And guess what they are going to do in a few months? They're going to sit in a building. The churches who had abundance help the church who had a need buy. They're going to sit in chairs that they didn't pay for and listen to a gospel funded by churches who will never be there, by missionaries who came from us to go there. Do you understand what the early church is trying to tell us? The early church is giving us this example of how this giving goes. In essence, if we were to label this part of the text, this would be that the early church's DNA included giving. This wasn't something that the church was like, okay, let's get together and let's talk about it, let's discuss it. No, the early church just did this. When there was a need, they didn't have to be like, okay, you know those pet commercials where they show all of these really bad pets? There's a really sad song in the background, right? And they're like, for just a dollar a day. You could sponsor your own pet, making sure they have food, water, somewhere safe to sleep at night. I'm going to keep playing this song until you call the number at the bottom of the screen. Right? The early church doesn't have to go there. Because the early church says, listen, because we have Jesus, when there's a need, we're like, we got this. We'll take care of that need. We'll meet that need. We're going to come together. We may not be able to meet all of that need, but we're in. Count us in. If that means, in the funny term, less Starbucks. I've never had Starbucks. Sorry. I can't have caffeine, so Starbucks is like of no help at all, right? So no Starbucks or no whatever it is because I need to meet this thing. This is what I'm going to do, right? Early church understood this pattern for giving. And so let me give you really three things about their pattern for giving. First, their giving was consistent. Giving became a matter of regularity in the church. Now, I want to be very careful because the early church is coming out of like an Old Testament law into a New Testament grace kind of thing. So there's some weird things that happened in the early church that maybe are different than ours. But the early church is not in some kind of Old Testament law rigidity thing where like in the Old Testament, God says, listen, if you get this, you give this percentage. And if you give this, you give this percentage. And on this day of this month, you do this. Like that's not what the early church is doing, right? They're giving consistently, but it doesn't have this like, it doesn't really matter if you give kind of thing. No, the church took it seriously. We're going to meet needs, right? It wasn't the giving itself that was the serious part. It was the meeting the need that was the serious part. And if you take the serious job of, hey, listen, it's my job, it's our job as a church to meet that need, then my giving becomes a serious task. Because anything I refuse to give shorts that result, the end need that we're trying to meet. 1 Corinthians 16:2, on the first day of every week, remember, put aside something. A sure sign of Christian growth is faithful giving. Maturing Christians work to be dependable in what we give. Second, their giving was not only consistent, it was sacrificial. 2 Corinthians 8:2. For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. So, a bunch of people in poverty got together to meet a need of somebody else who was in worse poverty. One of the things that it's always interesting is when we start to think about where we are kind of on the totem pole of the world. And there are lots of times where we feel like we're behind, right? Well, I don't have the big house. I don't have a bunch of nice cars. I have all of those things. And, you know, and so I don't own all of those toys or have all those things. Then if you stop and you consider the people like in India or Liberia or people that are in places where they don't have running water. I was actually reading an article the other day. There's lots of missions that go around and they put wells in these really rural parts of the world. And for the first time in these people's lives, they have access to clean drinking water. And we instantly go, that's awesome. But you know what happens when in a place they've never had clean water gets clean water? The local warlords charge people to come get clean water. So if you put in clean water, but you don't have police to make sure that everyone has access to clean water, guess what you've just done? You've just funded the mafia, right? And I'm reading this article, and I'm reading this missionary, and he's talking about this particular town in which this missions group went in and they put in a well. There's 1,000 people in this town. The first 2 months after the well was put in, 114 people were killed trying to get drinking water. Right? Now listen, I say that, you respond, what does that tell you? You have a blessed life. You can go to the drinking fountain in the back, and your biggest concern is if the drinking fountain's still cold. Right? You're like, oh, it's not even cold water. Do you understand the early church? They had nothing, and they were known as the giving church. So there's a group of people who are not considered as having nothing. We need to be a giving church. We need to be people who meet these needs. Our giving has to be sacrificial. To be honest, this is a convicting truth. Because a lot of times in my life when I give, I often give in areas that don't cost me. Right? I can give money to this or to that or to the Perrys. And after I give that, I don't go, man, we're not going to be able to buy groceries this week. Or, man, I just did that. I'm not going to be able to pay this bill or that bill, right? I'm giving out of savings, or I'm giving out of things that I've set aside for ministry or those things. And so, listen, their giving was sacrificial. It cost. It's in 2 Samuel in the 20s. David is talking to Arana, how to say his name. And he says, I will not worship God with something that cost me nothing. Because he was going to give it to the king. And David's like, no. No, if I'm going to worship God, you can't give it to me and then I worship God with it. No, I have to buy this. It has to cost me something. Right? Our giving has to be sacrificial. And then third, their giving came from the heart. Motives matter. If you give so people know you give, then your reward has already been received. The way we give, how we give, is important. It has to be sincere. It has to be willing to do things for the cause of Christ. I put three simple things in my notes about what kind of heart we should have when it gives. We should give a willing heart. I say this is like our hands need to be open on our stuff. Right? When God asks for it, we go, yeah, you can have that. Yes, I'll do that. Yes, I'll give to that. When we do what God has told us to do, our heart has to be willing. maybe you have never done this, but there are times in my obedience where I'm kind of like the toddler who's being dragged across Walmart. I mean, he's going, but he's not going willingly, right? And spiritually speaking, the Lord's telling me, no, Mike, you need to go do this. I'm like, I don't want to do that, right? And spiritually speaking, God is kind of dragging me across the floor, kind of kicking and screaming, and he's like, hey, listen, no, you need to go over there. We talked about this in the context of Jonah in my Sunday school class last week. Jonah kind of goes and he preaches in Nineveh, not because he wants to, not because he, just because he has to. Well, the big fish thing, you know, so he's on land, so he's only going to get swallowed by next, so let's just go to Nineveh. But if you think about the story of Jonah real quick, if Jonah had just left at the very beginning of Jonah 1, got the message of the Lord, went to Nineveh, and preached the message, and Nineveh responded like they did, we would know Jonah as the greatest evangelist who ever lived. We would write books on the Jonah evangelism method. We would have posters with, like, be like Jonah. And instead, because Jonah did not obey God willingly, when we talk about Jonah, we go, he's the guy who got swallowed by the fish. Understand the difference in what a willing heart does to that story. Imagine what God could do with 100 plus people in Mount Home Bible Church if we all had willing hearts to do whatever God called us to do. Second thing, it's not just a willing heart, but it's a loving heart. Love pursues. Love endures. Love serves. Jesus asked Simon, Simon, son of Jonas, do you love me more than these? That question can be asked of us and all of the stuff we own. Do you love God more than that? The rich young man came to Jesus and he goes, how do I get to heaven? And he says, sell all that you have and give it to the poor. And the young man walked away sorrowing because he had many possessions. He said to Jesus, I would come, I would follow you, I would serve you, but I just love my stuff too much. What do we love? And third, a joyful heart. When you love someone, you enjoy giving things to them. I am at a point in my life where Carrie and I do not really get awesome Christmas presents. It's not really what happens. Our kids get awesome Christmas presents, right? You parents are laughing. You know what I'm talking about. So guess what I enjoy at Christmas? I enjoy watching my kids open up their package, open up their present, and be like, yes, that's the thing I wanted. My son Caleb, I like to guess what's in my Christmas presents. And so I take the great pride in being able to guess a lot of the things that are wrapped without cheating. You know, cheating's fun too, but I just normally I can guess. So this year, Caleb stuck weights in my presents, so I wouldn't be able to guess what it was. So for his birthday, when he turned 16, he kind of knew he was going to get a cell phone for his birthday. And so I took one of those plastic Mickey Mouse kids cell phones, and I put it in an iPhone box. So when he opened his present on his birthday, he was like, oh, I got an iPhone. And he opened the box, and he instantly started laughing. I'm like, that was payback for the weights in my Christmas present, right? All right, now, one of the things that I enjoy as a dad is watching my kids be happy in the things that they're getting, watching me be able to meet their needs or even their wants, be able to do things with them and watching them enjoy life and have fun, right? When we love people, giving to them, it's fun. It's enjoyable. So let me say it this way. If you don't enjoy giving to God, it's a clear indication that there's an issue with your love for God. Because when my love for God is not correct, then my giving to God will not be correct. Because it can't be correct if my love isn't right. First Chronicles 29. It says, "And now we thank you, our God, and praise your glorious name. But who am I, and what is my people, that we should be able to offer you things willingly? For all things come from you, and of your own have we given you." Literally saying to God, listen, it's your stuff. If you want me to do that with it, and it, I mean, it's yours, okay. I mean, I don't understand, but that's what you want me to do, great. When we have the proper perspective of our life, and we can join together as a church, we can identify needs, we can meet needs, we can glorify God through giving. This morning, I don't know where you are. I don't know what God's laying in your heart. I don't know what need it is, maybe that you know. But God wants you to meet needs. He wants you to be a practical meter of the needs of the people around you. So find a need. Meet a need. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It could be a small thing. I think sometimes when we meet needs that are small, it's almost more important because people know that we care about little things. Right? Inside of marriage, it's like it's not usually the big things that matter. I mean, they do matter, but it's a lot of the little things. When you do little things, it's like, oh, look, oh, they noticed that thing. Or like yesterday when we were turning all the couches upside down and vacuuming underneath them, right? And it's like, why? Because those are little things, little statements of, hey, notice those things he done, and we did those things. It's a commitment to those relational things. So we're going to turn the world upside down. How are we going to do it? We're not going to do it alone. We're not going to do it as individuals. We're going to have to do it as a community of people who give. And why do we give? We give because we love the one who has given everything to us. And that really is the perfect kind of intro to where we're going to go inside of taking communion. See, the picture of communion is that Christ emptied himself, died on a cross, and took on his body our sin. He loved us, so he gave. The verse we teach all kids in John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he gave." Right? So this morning, as we always do, before we take communion together, we take just a moment of quiet, personal prayer, where we just talk with God, make sure that we're right with God, that we're ready to partake of the Lord's table together. And as you're having quiet prayer, deacons and elders, if you would come to the front to help serve.